Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'm here to tell you that after being a journalist and a news presenter for four of the biggest television networks in the United States, it's time for some context and for some truth-telling. And in that vein, here's what we're going to be talking about today. Number one, why is the Supreme Court saying Donald Trump must be on all the ballots in the United States? Number two, why'd he do it? Why did this kid who leaked classified U.S. war documents and just got 16 years in prison, why did he do it? And number three, the president of the United States now says he's a big fan of people who criticize the government. Who's he talking about? Are you ready? This is Direct Impact. Finally, it's in, the decision as to whether Donald Trump can be excluded, pushed out from the ballots in some states is in.
We've learned that it was a 9-0 decision ruling that Donald Trump can be on the ballot in Colorado and other states. Justices during the oral argument seemed very skeptical of the idea that one state could decide for the nation whether Donald Trump was an insurrectionist and was therefore disqualified under this 150-year-old provision.
So let me take you through it a little bit. So what the court is saying essentially is that if the president is to be excluded from for past actions from an election, no matter how bad those actions may be or may not be, it should not be up to the states. They're saying it should be up to Congress to make a national decision like that. You know what? They're probably right. Because imagine what would happen if Democratic states or Republican states in the future, for that matter, got a chance to eliminate the other party's candidate. That, my friends, would be a mess. Let's talk about something else now. I want to talk about young Jack Teixeira.
Massachusetts Air National Guardsman Jack Teixeira pleading guilty in Boston federal court today. The terms of his plea deal include 16 years in prison. Prosecutors say the airman used his top secret security clearance to access highly classified intelligence about the war in Ukraine and other conflicts that he shared in a chat group on the social media site Discord.
Discord. What's Discord? It's a place where gamers hang out. Most of them are kids, like Teixeira. I mean, did you see his picture? And what he did was reckless, and it was stupid. It was not an act of journalism, what he did, nor did he do it because he was pro-peace. He did it because of his ego. He wanted to show off. And yet the court is cutting him a break. Are you thinking what I'm thinking as I'm saying these words? Shouldn't the government give a break to those who act on personal ethics and not ego? I say that, by the way, because I'm a journalist, and I believe if you share a valuable truth, that should be taken into account. And then again, most people who do the news today don't agree with me here in the United States. But then again, most of them are not journalists. Seriously. In fact, many of them are former government shills who report only what the State Department tells them to report. Look, I'm not against the State Department, okay? It's necessary. I just think a journalist is supposed to challenge those guys, not cheerlead for them. Take the Iraq War, for example. Our government was cheered into that situation, right? We cheered for them to go ahead and do the war. And what did we get out of it, right? The creation of ISIS, less, not more democracy, and more terrorism. And to this day, those truths are not told on television here in America, in our country. In fact, the idiots who planned that war are invited onto news shows. You see them all the time. To this day, they're invited and treated like they're heroes. Really? Shilling for the government is easy. It takes guts to tell the truth. Take the case of Julian Assange. He told the truth about some horrible things that our government did and lied about in Iraq and in Afghanistan. And for that, he's been chased, tortured, and or imprisoned for the better part of the last 12 years of his life. Let's hear now from our president, the president of the United States. Here's Joe Biden.
He bravely stood up to the corruption, the violence, and all the bad things that...
Yes, he did. You're right, Mr. President. Exactly that. Julian Assange reported truthfully on many bad things. And for that?
He had him arrested. He had him prosecuted for fabricated crimes. He sentenced him to prison. He was held in isolation.
Yep, all true. His life has been made a living hell. And yet Assange, Assange never gave in.
Even in prison, he was a powerful voice for the truth.
All right, I got to apologize for you. And there's a reason I'm apologizing right now. You see, I was playing with you a little bit there. That was a game I was playing with you to make this point. In that speech, Mr. Biden is not referring to Julian Assange, because the people who wrote that speech for him don't like Assange. But you know who they do like? They really like this guy named Alexei Navalny. And that's who President Biden was praising. Why? Because he criticized not the U.S. government, rather the Russian government, before dying in a prison after being sentenced for extremism for criticizing Vladimir Putin. By the way, I defend his right to criticize Vladimir Putin. And he did have his share of supporters in Russia. To be fair, that support was tiny, tiny compared to the vast support he gets in Western countries. So who was this dude, Navalny, right? He was, in the end, a politician with motives, tactics, and an ideology, which most of us here in the West have never really bothered to understand. Our government and news media have a simple take on Navalny that goes something like this. He doesn't like Putin, therefore he must be great. It's that simple. Those same Western leaders wanted Navalny to be heard because they believed he was a truth teller. Fine, that's their right. But if that's the case, wouldn't you also want Assange to be heard as well? And if not, the comparison screams hypocrisy, no? There is some good news here, by the way. This is new. That hypocrisy is becoming evident to a British high court. They are deciding now whether to extradite Assange back to the United States, where he would be punished even more severely. Judges are asking some good common sense questions. Here's Julian Assange's brother talking about this, saying that he was in court. He senses a little bit of a change with the judges.
You know, making statements like, oh, so if Julian is extradited, does that mean any journalist in the UK could be extradited? And the prosecution essentially had to answer yes. So, you know, the judges making these sorts of points I found quite interesting in a different vibe.
That is a good question. Why did it take 12 years to ask it? But why the continual attacks on Assange still? Do we only support truth tellers if they criticize Russia, but if they criticize our government, then we disparage them like this?
I would argue that it's closer to being a high-tech terrorist.
Assange is a narcissist who has created nothing of value. He relies on the dirty work of others to make himself famous.
He has to answer for what he has done.
This guy's a traitor, a treasonous, and I'm not for the death penalty. So if I'm not for the death penalty, I only want to do it illegally. Shoot the son of a beep.
Shoot the son of a beep? Shoot the son of a... I mean, that's how our government and those who take orders from them in the media respond to a journalist who is arrested for publishing truth. Let's see once again what they say about Navalny this time. This was put together by editors, colleagues at RT International. Tell me what you think after watching this. Now they're talking about Navalny.
Alexei Navalny has been a brave leader who stood up against corruption and autocracy.
He died for a cause to which he dedicated his whole life, freedom.
The world has lost a freedom fighter in Alexei Navalny.
Was a reminder of the extraordinary brutality of Putin and his government.
Quite a difference, huh? I want to close with a quote. I think it fits this case, where we embrace only those things that are part of our team, even if they're wrong, and we hate whatever is offered by the other team, even if they're right. The quote comes from a fellow Cuban, interestingly enough. Her name is Anais Nin. She moved to France from Havana in the early 1900s, and there she became a famous novelist. And here is her quote. She says, or writes, "We don't see things as they are. We see things as we are." Gosh, she nailed it. All right, is she right? Do we only see things from our own tainted perspectives most of the time? And what does it say about our government? That is what I'm going to be asking our guest. After we take this break, we will be joined by legal and media analyst Lionel. Don't go away.
When all truths seem wrong, when all rules just don't hold, And a new world is yet to shape out. Disdain becomes the etiquette, and engagement equals betrayal. When so many find themselves worlds apart, we choose to look for common ground.
By the middle of the 19th century, practically the whole of India had been under the rule of the British Empire. The colonial authorities had imposed a heavy tax, bringing the people into poverty, and were exporting natural resources. And moreover, these authorities absolutely had no consideration for the traditions of the local population, treating them like second-class citizens. The British were showing signs of disrespect even to those who cooperated with them. The fact of ignoring the religious beliefs of the Hindus led to the mutiny of the sepoys, mercenary soldiers serving under the British Crown. The rebellion began on the 10th of May, 1857, in the garrison town of Meru, north of India, in the form of a mutiny. The rebels quickly took over Delhi. The heroic resistance of the Indian people lasted for 1.5 years. However, the forces were not equal. The colonial authorities dealt with the rebels cruelly. The enslaved sepoys were tied to the mouth of the cannon and were shot right through their bodies for the amusement of the public. This type of execution was called the Devil's Wind. The obliteration of the mutiny resulted in the death of 800,000 inhabitants of India. However, the British Empire never broke the free spirit of the Indians and their will for resistance.
All right, here we go. I want to welcome you back from wherever it is in the world that you're watching us right now. We're joined by Lionel. He's a legal and a media analyst. And I figure this is like throwing red meat at a guy like Lionel, this type of story filled with so many twists, turns, and true irony and hypocrisy. I want to read you that quote that was written by a Cuban author, interestingly enough, who lived most of her lives in France, died, I think, in 1977. Anais Nin writes, "We don't see things as they are. We see things as we are." Is that really what this comes down to? Is it a universal problem? Or is there something about us lately as a government that makes us more guilty of that than others?
Well, Rick, a couple of things here. Let's go back to some rudiments. The only thing I know as a lawyer and as somebody who follows, by the way, this is my religion, this is my Bible, this is the Constitution. And that's all I know. And I'll let other people decide whether Navalny was a hero, whether Assange is a hero. I don't really care for purposes of this. But I will tell you this. In the year 2001, the Supreme Court dealt with an issue in a case called Bartnicki against the Vopper. And it came to deal with a talk show host on a radio station who became in possession of a conversation that was illegally taped, gathered. It was a wiretap violation. Mm-hmm. Somebody took it from a labor. It doesn't really matter. So you have somebody who is a media person who comes into contact with something that was stolen but is newsworthy. Sound familiar? Okay. So he published it, broadcast it. The question was, is he absolved from any kind of liability? Is there a First Amendment right? First Amendment, that's why they call it first, the First Amendment right that he enjoyed by publishing something which would be illegal if he did it, but wasn't because somebody else did it. Supreme Court said, absolutely, he is protected by the First Amendment. Daniel Ellsberg, what is that all about?
It's the same papers. Thing. Yeah.
Daniel Ellsberg, I'm convinced, violated all kinds of laws when he went and copied from the Rand Corporation. Now, Rick, you talk about something which is very important. And it's funny. The notion of a reporter. What we're seeing today is we have media proxies. They're repeaters, not reporters. They're actually they're outboard representatives of the government.
Yeah, and can I add a caveat to that, because this is my turf now. This is what I've spent my life doing. The vast majority of them do not have journalism degrees. The vast majority of them, and I can name them, but I won't embarrass them, have never covered a story, have never actually been a reporter on the street. So this is like going to a hospital and a doctor walks into your office and you say, do you have a medical degree? And he says, no, but, you know, I think I could probably do this. That's what's going on with journalism today. They hire people because they're pretty or because they're whatever, connected, or because they're willing to take a lot of money to tell things that aren't true.
Well, obviously, people are hired because they're pretty, and enough about me. But here's the story. You know, Rick, the thing is that I don't differ with you, but I want to qualify something. Roger Ailes one time was asked a question, should journalists be licensed? And he said, you only need a license to cut hair. Now, there are people who, by the way, Rick, who one day may be outside and there's a fire, and they have a phone, and they pick their phone up, and they take a picture of it, and they publish it, and I think they're a journalist. I think they're a reporter, and I think they are as valid as anybody else, for that matter, as Walter Cronkite. They may not be as skilled. So in today's new platform, citizen, civilian, alternative journalists, people who have opinions, I think are under the protection of this. However, when you're up at that upper echelon, the leagues of CNN and others, I listen very carefully to what you're saying, because it's one thing to be a bureau chief, it's another thing to work
Wait a minute. I'm gonna push back on you on that. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with being someone who doesn't have a journalism degree, for example. If you've practiced your craft and excelled at it, there are great journalists who don't have a home on these channels because they can't. They won't hire them because they're truth tellers. So, yes, there are places where people on the alternative news locations these days can be skilled, can have a following, and should have a following, but they still have to be able to practice their craft in such a way so that they're doing it correctly. I don't want the guy who shows up at your backyard barbecue, has too much to drink, and just starts opining all kinds of crazy stuff to say, oh, yeah, that's the guy I want to listen to every day on the radio. Well, that's a whole different
case. Now I'm going to push back again on that. I'll let the individuals decide whether that I may tend to agree with you, but I don't want to see or suggest who's valid and who's not. Again, I'm going to stick with the Constitution in this particular case. Let me give you an example of something. I love this. I love, Rick, the way, you know, for thee and not for me, Julian Assange. Julian Assange is, for all practical purposes, he's like the Jose Padilla, who was the individual who was arrested in Chicago, an American citizen who was under the first Enemy Combatant Act, who was just forgotten and basically went mad in a prison. Now, we had a fellow named Gonzalo Lira. Now, you may not agree with this, but I believe Gonzalo Lira, who was a journalist.
Yeah.
And he did a YouTube channel.
Yes.
He was in Ukraine.
Yes.
And basically, from what we understand, he was killed or died or, like Navalny, identical with somebody that many of us liked or whatever. He wasn't an agent. I don't think he was called, I love the way they say, Putin foe.
So where's that story?
No, remember,
no but you raise a great point, Lionel. You got one right. Where was that?
And I'm not even a licensed journalist.
Where was that story? Where was the United States government standing behind one of its citizens, a journalist, Nola? He was a U.S. citizen who went to Ukraine.
Oh, yeah.
He was filing stories that the Zelensky government didn't like. And one day he mysteriously disappeared after being detained and then taken to a hospital. Where's that criticism?
And also, speaking of the State Department, it is their number one, the only reason they're in power is not to do negotiation with the president, basically is to act as a liaison for citizens abroad and the like. Let me also give you something which is important, and which is also critical. You know, this idea of how some people are allowed, some people are okay, and some people aren't, that's the thing I find so interesting. Nobody cares about this. Let me throw another one at you, just
well,
to give an idea.
By the way, I'm pushing back on both. I'm telling you right now, and I'm telling you that most of the people at CNN feel like they have to say things or promote a certain message because they work at CNN. And many of those may or may not be journalists. There are also people in the alternative news community who are very good, and I respect them, and they don't work for one of those places. But I think there should be a general agreement as to who in society is a BS artist and who actually has something interesting to say. We are allowed as a society to come to those conclusions. I'm not going to have them arrested, but I'm allowed to have my opinion.
Well, put it this way. If we could have a graphic BS artist, I would be honored. If you could put a lower third for me and have it in the file. Let me give you another one, too. Rick, this is something which I still find amazing. On January the 6th, there were a number of Americans, a lot of them ragtag, wearing camis, one guy with an eye patch, one guy with a, Valkyrie helmet and whatever it was, who were alleged to have been able to overthrow the government. Mm-hmm. The 82nd Airborne, the 1st Marine Division, this guy with a pot belly and a Gadsden flag. All right. Some of these people, Rick, served more time in prison than child molesters. Now, if you think that's fair, that's okay. That, to me, was absolutely a violation of the First Amendment to me. Now, some were guilty of trespass and a variety of things, and that's another story.
Yeah. But what we're talking about here, let's bring it back to where we started the conversation. There is a extreme double standard when it comes to our government, and it's outside of politics. This is not Democrats versus Republicans. This is not Biden versus Trump. This is really about the underpinnings of what I think is happening in our government today, where the power of the State Department, those forces that make wars, more of them lately than I've ever seen before in my lifetime, seem to have a certain control over the messaging that we receive, and that's wrong.
Oh, of course. Oh, listen. Listen, there was a time when I was in talk radio and I was at WABC and I worked with Rush Limbaugh, there was a time when Bill Clinton was on Air Force One. He says, do we think that we wanted to bring the fairness doctrine back? He says, can't we get a Democratic talk show host who's favored? It's like, it was different then. Let me throw one more at you because, see, this is the thing. I love the way they say one guy's a political prisoner, other guy is. I mean, they're identical. There was a case recently of this Aaron Bushnell, this airman who self-immolated in front of the Israeli
Know it very well.
Embassy.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what did they say on NBC? He's a nut. And Andrea Mitchell, I think, ended her spot with, and if you know somebody who is suffering from suicidal ideations, call this number.
My okay. God. Did she really? Did you see it really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. In 1963, remember the monk?
Vietnam, I know it very well, yes.
Associated Press, picture of the, we said, what a spirit. What a, Bobby Sands and the hunger strikers. This is incredible. But this guy, because he's taking the wrong side, is a nut. You see, one man's a terrorist, another man's freedom fighter.
So, but we
you
do
see,
that, but we do, and we do that especially, and I'm not here to promote, you know, Russian politics or Navalny or Putin or anybody else for that matter. That's not my job. I'm a journalist. But it does seem like we take certain countries that we decide we need to be antagonistic with, and where we're going to put our ire. And it's Iran, and it's Russia, and it's China, and it's Venezuela. And I'm not here to defend any one of those or put them down, but it's wrong to do that.
Listen. We remember, and in particular, I'm a native Floridian, second generation, and I remember Cuba. I mean, I'm not Cuban, but all my friends, everybody, I mean, from Tampa. And I remember, I mean, this just at the height of the Cold War, I live where CENTCOM is, MacDill Air Force Base, duck and cover. And I remember Boris and Natasha, Russophobia, Cold War, Russians throughout history, everything from I will destroy you to Khrushchev. I mean, these dour, crazy, evil empire. I swear to you, there's no, if put it this way, if we redid Columbo, in our age, the first thing would be Putin did it.
I'm going to push back on you there as well, because we came to a time as then when Phil Donahue interviewed Brezhnev on his show, where Ted Koppel would literally invite a Russian correspondent or reporter on his show, when we shared ballet, when we shared projects up in space. There was a time when even with the Soviet Union, there was an abridging that took place. Now, it's just the opposite. I would argue it was better then in terms of understanding and at least attempting to have relations.
By the way, you've said at least five times you're pushing back. And you're not at all. I agree with you.
Okay.
Let me tell you another one. Tucker Carlson just interviewed Putin. Okay, there was a scene a while back. Let's go back in time. Mike Wallace was sitting on the floor with Ayatollah Khomeini. He says, please, don't take this the wrong way. But people think you're crazy. Now, that's guts to tell Ayatollah Khomeini with these people. Now, that was no problem. Barbara Walters interviewed Castro. You can go down the list.
Yeah.
Larry King interviewed Chavez. You name it. But the thing is that, look, it comes down to
I interviewed Castro. I interviewed Gorbachev. I interviewed a bunch of people who are supposed Noriega in prison, no less, throughout my career. Seems like I could do it back then without being castigated, right? Today, no.
And I bet you pushed back.
Of course I pushed back.
I like it.
Listen, you're an honorary Cubano. How's that? I'm going to give you that title, and you can wear it with pride. That's Lionel, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, Lionel. We're out of time, but thanks for being our friend today. Great comments. Great conversation. Before I go, I want to remind you of our mission I mentioned just a little while ago, where I do believe it's really important that we de-silo the world. We've got to stop living in these little boxes, as we saw in this newscast. Truths don't live in boxes. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact.